It's the Las Vegas Sports Line.
Here we go. It is the Wednesday edition of the Las Vegas Sports Line. Happy to have you with us. I'm Dave Koken. Teddy Covers is here. Patrick Everson is here.
Howdy.
And Ari Platinum is fiddling around with buttons on the other side of the console. Mark Seidel is not here. Clearly wilting in the face of adversity. I was giving him a bad time yesterday in the Red Sox Astros game, and it got worse for him after the show ended, because JBJ with the grand slam, 8-2, Red Sox lead the series 2-1. We're going to talk about game 4 a little later in the show. That'll be a marquee matchup. Meanwhile, we will cover the Brewers and Dodgers just briefly, because they're actually getting underway, so we don't want to spend too much time on old news. But we'll check out a couple of old news items from last night, guys. We begin with the Golden Knights, who come back home after ending the road trip on a high note with a shutout win over the Flyers. And Patrick, big crowd, over 18,000 in attendance last night, and they got to see the Golden Knights in control against the Buffalo Sabres pretty much the entire game. Good performance. They pick up their second straight win.
Yeah, probably not necessarily good for the books. As we know, these home games get the daylights bet out of them. This was the game I talked about with Jeff Stoneback and MGM Books on Monday morning, with the Knights coming back home after that rough road trip, and really just kind of a rough start to the season overall. And he's like, look, they're going to be a $1.80 to -$2 favorites in this game, and we're going to see plenty of money on them. I don't think anybody's backing off anytime soon on this. And I think I saw CG going back and forth with CG yesterday a couple of times, that number was up around $2 or so. And they cash if you're willing to lay that. And what was the final score again? It was like
4-1.
4-1. So then that's the thing. They always 4-0.
They gave up a 3-0, and they gave up a late goal. Empty. Buffalo pulled the goaltender, and they got a goal to cost Fleury a second straight shutout, and then Knights scored an empty net goal.
And as you guys are well aware, all those guys, a lot of these bettors don't like the fact that Vegas is such a heavy favorite, so they take the puck line, and those guys did just fine last night as well.
A quick question, which I didn't put on our little format today. This is Laker country, and mm-hmm. LeBron is now a Laker. Teddy, do you think we're going to see somewhat? It won't be as dramatic as with the Golden Knights, but I think it could be significant. Are we going to see skewed lines because of anticipated heavy action on the Lakers locally?
Only if the Lakers come out like a juggernaut. I mean, the Knights didn't start out with that kind of a betting bandwagon. They earned it because they were making everybody money. And when people are making winning bets supporting any given team, they're much more likely to get back to the window to support that same team. If the Lakers come out and go 9-1 against the spread their first 10 games, you better believe there's going to be a bandwagon. But, let's not put the cart before the horse when it comes to the LA Lakers. They're much more concerned about this spring than they are about winning games and covering point spreads in November.
Brewers and Dodgers about to get underway in Game 5, a pivotal Game 5, because the series is now even at 2 games apiece. Marathon last night. The Brewers had a chance, but they couldn't get the winning run across. The Dodgers eventually did, and they get the 2-1 13-inning victory. Brand-new series, guys, with Clayton Kershaw on the mound this afternoon. Dodgers always big favorites when Kershaw takes the mound. Late innings could be interesting here, because the team that's ahead will have a little bigger than normal advantage if somebody's ahead going into the late innings, because we're going to get shadows late in this game at Dodger Stadium. 5 o'clock or so out there, it's tough to see the ball if you're a hitter.
I'm thinking right from the get-go. I mean, you don't see 2 o'clock starts in L.A. And from my buddy that goes to Dodgers games all the time, he says this: the first few innings is going to be really tough.
Oh, interesting.
For the batters. He came out to said, I bet the first 5 under. Because also, given the fact that every single relief pitcher for both teams basically was in play last night, you don't know how the bullpens are going to play in this game. But following a night where a clutch hit was nearly impossible to come by for either squad, the first 5 under makes a lot of sense to me. That's something that you still have time to run to the betting window to get down on.
An interesting note, by the way, in watching the 13th inning, the bottom of the 13th last night, when the Wild pitch put the guy on second, I thought, I might take a shot and just load the bases here, because that would have forced Urias to be the hitter with the bases loaded and 2 outs. They had nobody to pinch hit for him at that point. They had used everybody. I think I go, and I know that means moving the winning run to third base rather than second, but I don't know if I'm pitching a Bellinger there with first base. And Consell's done so much right this year, it's tough to criticize him, but I thought he made the wrong move pitching to Bellinger in that situation. And I personally would have loaded the bases and said, you know what, pitcher, if you can beat me, fine. If not, we're going to the 14th inning.
Yeah, that's an interesting strategy for sure. It didn't cross my mind. But
I didn't see anybody mention it or talk about it. It's like, I think I'm the only one. Am I the only one who thought of this? Because it really went through my mind. It's like, I'm looking at the batting order. It's like, they have nobody left on the bench, and they can force Urias to hit for himself here in this inning.
Again, when you talk managers, I don't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, Patrick, go ahead.
But managers, even in situations like this, thinking outside of the box, like, I'm not going to walk one guy, I'm going to walk two guys and put the winning run on third in a 13th inning of a playoff game. If it doesn't work, the manager takes so much heat for that move that even if it does work, it's not worth the risk, you know, from a risk-reward perspective for that manager. I don't think that I would, you know, did Hinch even think it? I don't even know that he did.
I don't know, but I did. I'm sitting there watching the game going, I don't know about facing Bellinger here. And then, you know, and just
ball game over.
Put Puig on, mm-hmm. and you get the bases loaded, and here comes Urias. So, you know, okay. They didn't go that route, and that game is over. All right, time for us to check out what's coming up, because we like previewing games, and we got some line moves in some college football games, so we're going to focus on those in today's edition of the Wednesday MJ Christensen 4 at 4.
One, two, bring it to the folks.
Put the fours up. Put the fours up, I said. Do it right now.
Tonight's action is just around the bend, and the guys want to get your night off to a great start.
Four.
It's the Las Vegas Sports Lines. 4 at 4.
Not one, not two, not three, but four.
Unbelievable.
All right, here we go. And these aren't the big, well, actually, there's one really big game on here. These are all substantial games, we'll say, but there's been substantial line movement on these, which we can talk about. We'll begin with North Carolina and Syracuse. We did the Wager Talk videos today, and this is one of the games I'm betting this week, so I decided to do a video on it. I took North Carolina. I took them plus 10, minus 120. That line is gone. There is some sharp money coming into North Carolina. I'll give you my reasoning why I think the Tar Heels are alive here. Going into last week's game at Virginia Tech, or at home versus Virginia Tech, I kind of like Virginia Tech during the week, but I have a good contact in North Carolina. And he told me, he said, boy, they've had a really good week of practice. I mean, the players are energized. They got everybody back from suspension now. They like Fedora. I mean, he might be a lame duck coach, but the kids really like him. They're going to play hard in this game. And boy, did they ever. They outplayed Virginia Tech. They lost the game on a late score with about a half a minute to go by Virginia Tech. I think North Carolina's live going into Syracuse. The Orange, two straight losses. Their defense is not very good. This looks like a really competitive game to me. Patrick, tell us about what's happening with the line in this one.
Well, I talked about all the games we're going to talk about this afternoon with Eric Osterman over at the Las Vegas Superbook. I just talked to him early this afternoon. So just before the show, Orange opened 9.5, and Eric said they took a really large wager on Syracuse and went to 10. But as you said, Dave, they got some sharp buyback on the Tar Heels at plus 10, now down to 9 on this game. So bettors liking that number.
I'm not with you on the North Carolina side here. And I'll tell you why. The way they lost that game last week, they did have a great week of practice. Mm-hmm. And they gave Virginia Tech everything they could handle. And they had that game flat out won. Flat out won. First and goal at the 1 yard line. They're up 5. There's what, like a couple minutes to play?
Yep.
And boom. Fumble.
Yep.
98 yard drive for Ryan Willis the other way. And North Carolina ends up. You know, and they scored it. It was close to the last play of the game. They used all the clock to get there. It was a crushing and demoralizing loss for a 1-4 football team coming off a 3-win campaign. Now they got to go on the road. And Syracuse, yeah, they've lost back-to-back games on the highway against quality foes.
Oh, good game against Clemson.
Sure.
Not so good against Pittsburgh.
No, but they lost in overtime. It wasn't like that. And North Carolina's defense is going to have a hard time against stopping Syracuse. And Syracuse, you know, is capable of putting a 50 spot on this team. And I haven't seen the Tar Heels offense play at that level in any game this season where they're going to be marching up and down the field trading points with someone. So I can understand the move. I can understand the support for North Carolina. And we've seen money come against Syracuse in multiple games already this season. They have not been a popular choice among wise guy bettors. But I'm not sold on the North Carolina side.
I'll say this: if North Carolina goes out and gets whacked in this game, they might mail it in for the rest of the season.
Sure.
They'll get up for the one big rivalry game they've got left, and that might be it. Maryland and Iowa. Maryland's starting to get some respect in the betting market. Teddy, I think I can buy it. That one horrible game that they had looks like kind of an aberration now. They're actually not a bad football team, but I'll tell you what, Iowa's playing well. And Iowa was in a spot last week where I thought, I didn't play it, but I thought they could have problems at Indiana. It might be one of those spots where, Iowa tosses in their annual clunker against somebody they're supposed to beat. They didn't. They went out there and they beat up Indiana. So this looks like a pretty good football game.
It does, and a pretty good football game with a point spread that's sitting in double digits always has me looking towards the underdog. And, there's been a lot for all the turmoil with the Terps and the Durkin investigation. Now the parents getting involved. That is something of an off-field distraction. But Maryland sitting here at 4-2 this season. They had the bad loss to Temple. Even they lost to Michigan. They showed me something in that game because they fought. They were down and they fought. They didn't lay down and die. They came back and made some noise. They weren't good enough. And I don't know they're going to be good enough here to hang tough with Iowa. But the Hawkeyes off back-to-back blowouts. I don't know there's a whole lot of value on an Iowa team that doesn't make a lot of explosive plays that allow them to cover these double-digit spreads.
But Patrick, this one is a game that is moving at the books.
Yes, sir. Superbook opened Iowa 11 in double digits, as Teddy alluded to, down to -9, Eric said a little bit earlier today. And as you point out, it's a significant move. It's fair to say the Sharps are on Maryland in this one, like enough of what they've seen to think that that's an awful lot of points to lay against Iowa, who I agree. I think I was a very good team. So,
one thing I do really well, better than anything else, better than the handicapping, is I can get ahead of the market almost anytime I want. I know where games are going to go, and on that. In that aspect of analysis, I'm probably right 90% of the time. I'm not talking about picking winners and losers. I'm talking about getting the best of the number, knowing when it's right to play it. Here's one I got wrong. Oregon and Washington State. So Washington State opened as a small favorite on Sunday night. Oregon money shows up. Oregon goes to the favorite. And I was fairly well convinced that, Oregon's a... They're rolling right now. They're going to be a popular side this week. I don't know if Washington State's going to get enough sharp money to move this line. And I thought, I'll just sit around and wait on this one.
Oops.
Well, that was a mistake because Washington State is going to -3 in this game. Patrick, this is one of the real big movers on the board, and there is a ton of sharp money on the Washington State side. This is a pros versus Joes game.
No question, and you weren't the only one who got it wrong. They got it wrong on the other side of the counter, too, because this was a game I was talking about with Jeff Stoneback at MGM Books on Monday afternoon. We're shooting some videos over there that are up on covers now, and they opened pick. And Jeff's like, we feel like this is going Oregon's direction.
Yes.
We're trying to get ahead of this because we think it's going the Ducks' way and that they're going to end up at, Ducks 1, maybe Ducks 2, something like that.
I thought Oregon would end up -2 going into game day. And
right.
That's obviously not going to be the case.
So the books felt the same way on this, and I think the Superbook was at pick as well. And in talking about it earlier today with Eric at the Superbook, he said, look, they're seeing what he termed very even action now. Bettors taking Oregon +3, taking Washington State -2.5 as a jockey between those two numbers. And they're currently, or at least last I talked to them, they were at 3. But that's not where they started, and I don't think that's where the books necessarily expected. I think they saw it in the same way you did, Dave, and everybody, I think, is maybe a little bit surprised here.
Does this game get back closer to pick 'em? I don't think it does now. I think that any time it drops down, you're going to get the sharp money that's going to hit it again and keep it in that 2.5-3 range.
Yeah, there's some love out there for Uncle Rico, a.k.a. Gardner Minshew.
How much you want to bet I can throw this football over that mountain?
He's a spitting image. It's a great... there's some great memes out there with Minshew looking like Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, of course. But, when you have a multi-year starter who moves on to the NFL and gets replaced, and you had a program like Washington State where there's not a five-star recruit waiting in the wings... Initially, the markets really expected a drop-off from the Cougars this year. And that drop-off that they expected didn't happen.
Because Leach's system works with anybody.
Of course.
It just works.
We saw it at Texas Tech year after year. We're seeing it. You know, this is an 8-9 win program every year. They're not going to step up and beat the USCs or the Washingtons of the world very often. But they are going to beat just about everyone else on their schedule. And we're seeing that respect from the markets right now. And, of course, from a spot perspective, I mean, it wasn't just a win last week for Oregon. That was a
huge
win in a game.
A rivalry game.
In a game they should have lost. You know, the last second field goal.
Washington misses the field goal. The game's over.
Exactly. So now they got to go on the road, face a team that's going to be better at pushing the football downfield than Washington was last week. You know, the game plan for the Huskies with Browning was, you know, he's as we've said every week, Jake Browning's not that good. Minshew might be the better QB, and the markets are saying that right now.
By the way, I am not a series history guy. I barely look at it because the players change from year to year, and it's just not a big factor for me. But Washington State's covered 8 straight in the series. They have kind of owned this, and Pullman has not been a good stop for the Oregon Ducks. And I put this one in this rundown because, and I should mention, it's brought to you by MJ Christensen. MJ Christensen Diamonds in Boca Park, their one and only location, family-owned for 3/4 of a century. Cliff and Darlene Miller are going to take great care of you. They are so active in the community. It's a great place to do business with, and you're going to get the best deals on jewelry, appraisals, insurance, etc. in town. MJ Christensen Diamonds. Minnesota, Nebraska. I mentioned this one because all year long, we have seen Nebraska get sharp money week after week after week after week. And it finally ended, Patrick. This week, the early money, at least, is showing on Minnesota, and I don't think you're going to see buyback on Nebraska this time. I think this number could keep dropping.
It's possible. I mean, in talking with Eric over there at the Superbook, he's the bulk of what they're seeing is Huskers, and he pointed out what you said. He says, seems like the sharps are on Nebraska every single week, and maybe this is the week where it slows down. Yeah, I think at least to a degree. Eric said he's seen a little bit there, but it's maybe not the same as it's been the last few weeks. And it's, you know,
I wonder if it's still sharp action.
Right. It may not be. This may just be public play moving the number, and or maybe even, you know, and a lot of times with these, you're moving with the markets as well. So,
Teddy, there's a difference between moral victories, which are BS, and morale victories, where a team can come out of a game and say, you know what, we're pretty good. I think Minnesota might feel that way coming out of the Ohio State game. I wonder what Nebraska's mindset is after a really bad collapse. We talked about the North Carolina collapse. I think Northwestern's, Minnesota's, excuse me, Nebraska's was even worse.
It was definitely worse. A team that didn't know how to win a game. And now, of course, when you see a team that's sitting 0-6 and they've had opportunities to win games, certainly last week, and unable to close it out, it's not surprising to see the market say, yeah, we don't trust you laying points. We're going to come in the other direction. Of course, you know, I mean, the Gophers showed well for themselves last week.
They gave Ohio State a real game. That was a misleading final.
Sure, and they were able to run the football and control the clock in that game. If you remember, the first 3 weeks of the season, Minnesota defensively was solid.
Yeah.
The running game was there. They had those two really ugly losses.
The Maryland game was a disaster.
And the Iowa game was no better.
Yeah. But, they've got a win, and they held Fresno State to 14 points. That's not bad.
Sure, watching that game, they weren't the better team.
I know. I had Fresno in the game. It's like, what the? You know, they had the interception of the year. Saved the game for them. The guy made an unbelievable play in the end zone. But we'll see what happens. Anyway, morale victory as opposed to moral victory. Let's take a look at some NFL movers. This one's interesting to me. I guess people are really down, or at least the market is really down on the Broncos now, because the Cardinals, who are terrible, are getting the play, Teddy, in the Thursday night game.
Well, it's not just being down on the Broncos, all right, because Arizona has gotten play. It's also looking at the track record of the road teams on Thursday nights. You know, the only road team all year to win and cover on a Thursday night so far has been Philadelphia, and they did it against Eli Manning and a Giants team that's overvalued. On a bus ride trip, not a plane trip, so the road teams have had a very rough time on the Thursday night games. And the fact is, Vance Joseph is 1-9 straight up and against the spread as a head coach on the road. Denver has been abysmal on the highway. 8 of those losses have come by more than one score. So to say, all right, it's just a point or two too late with the Broncos, no big deal. They've been horrific on the highway. And of course, last year, remember, they had the 2-0 start. They went 1-9 their next 10 games. Here's a 2-0 start. Now they lost four in a row. I'm not surprised the money's coming to Arizona. This is, it's for as much circle the wagons time as it is for the Broncos. It's every bit as much circle the wagons time for the Arizona Cardinals, who got gashed on the ground last week. And Steve Wilks, quote, all of our jobs are in jeopardy. Mine, you know.
I don't think his job's in jeopardy as
Mike McCoy's
to
is.
Joseph.
Right.
I think Joseph's in real trouble. And, you know, that's a mess in Denver right now. The fan base. Now, I know fan bases don't mean a whole lot. But, boy, you saw something. And I know it was cold and it had snowed the day before. But you saw something over the weekend. I don't remember the last time I saw this. A lot of empty seats. In a Denver home game, and that's against the Rams, one of the maybe the most exciting team in the league. There were a lot of empty seats in that game. Fans are really down on Case Keenum already. I'm not used to seeing this out of Denver.
No, I was definitely a little surprised by it, but understand, myself a Broncos fan and a Colorado kid, that team's just not playing well, and as Teddy alluded to, 2-0 last year, and then they went in the tank, 2-0 this year, have gone in the tank. They just don't look good. So you can certainly see what's going on here. Talking with Eric Osterman at Superbook about this game. Broncos up at -2, dipped to 1, now 1.5. Better taking the home dog on a short week, as you guys have alluded to. And Eric said Cards got money at +2 and +1.5. He said not much Broncos money at all. And this game, he said, maybe a little light overall on action, you know, for a Thursday night primetime matchup, just because it's not a matchup people are particularly interested in.
And for being a Hall of Fame quarterback, John Elway's track record at picking quarterbacks, you know.
Right.
Remember, he traded up to get Tebow in the first round. He spent big money to sign Kyle Orton. Remember when he did that? And then, of course, Manning, who literally could not throw the last, you know, the first year he was good, and then he wasn't. You know, he spent all that money on Osweiler, brought him back again. Trevor Siemian traded up to get Paxton Lynch.
And you know where he was last Saturday? He was at the Oregon-Washington game.
Yeah,
scouting Herbert.
Yeah, exactly, scouting somebody. This is John Elway's fault, and Vance Joseph's going to take the blame, but the problem for the Broncos is roster-related and quarterback-related, and that has everything to do with management, not the coaching staff.
We have another London game this week. Patrick, this mild surprise to me. I did not think we'd see this line go from 7 to 6.5. I thought it might go from 7 to 7.5 with the Chargers in the favorites role against the Titans. I guess that has to do with the teams traveling to a neutral site over in London. I hate being one of those just looking at the last thing you saw handicappers, but boy, the Chargers looked good last week and the Titans did not.
Yeah, Eric thinks that's the way that this game's going to go. They were sitting, when I talked to him earlier, they were sitting 6.5, but he does think it's going to be one of those, ultimately, what have you done for me lately situations. Titans looked awful against the Ravens. Chargers looked very good against the Browns. He said they're not seeing too much in the way of sharp action on this right now, but he thinks that if they go back to 7, they might again see some takers on Tennessee at +7.
And, it's hard to be very enthusiastic about the Titans right now. When you drop back, they had 40 offensive plays, only ran 40 plays. 11 of those plays were sacks.
Okay, wow.
Amazing.
That's a bad ratio. And their offensive line is still a problem, and it's not like they were moving the football up and down the field with Mariota behind center even before last week. And one thing the Chargers have, that's real, they got a pass rush. So I'm not surprised at all that we've seen some money come in L.A., but the markets are still sitting at 6.5 at most books right now. It hasn't moved to a touchdown yet.
No, I think if you like the Chargers, you ought to lay it now. Mm-hmm. It's not going to 6, I don't think. And one other game we got to mention, there's no surprise here in terms of the way the market is assessing this one. Giants and Falcons, Teddy, they're going to have trouble getting bets of the Giants at this point.
Well, and it's funny because when you look at the stats, they really stand out. The Giants have better stats, and there will be sharp money on the Giants. There will absolutely be. When you break down the yards per play.
Because those people don't look at the external stuff, which right now the Giants, it sounds like this might be a fractured locker room right now.
The Giants are taking money every week. You know, and I this moved to 6 and back down to 5.5. The markets are like, no, we don't want this at 6. We're going to take the Giants at 6. And that has everything to do, The markets are not looking at the fact that Giants are 3-13 last year and 1-5 this year and have maybe the worst starting quarterback in the NFL, flat out. The markets are looking at, look at the Giants' stats, and he's their yards per play number.
He's not the worst quarterback.
I know, but one of those.
Because as long as Peterman is on a roster.
Okay. Peterman won't be on a roster.
No, okay.
No, I mean, the Bills even said, the quote-unquote unnamed source said that McDermott was, quote, in danger of losing the team if he put Peterman out there this week. That's why Derek Anderson got the start. But statistical handicappers are going to look at the Giants' defense and the Giants' rushing numbers and say the Giants are the better of these two teams catching points, even though they're 3-13 last year and 1-5 this year. And, of course, Atlanta's defense is horrific and isn't going to get any better because they've lost their Pro Bowlers. So there'll be wise guy money on the Giants.
Did I not, my money, though. I did not bet this game. Did I miss something here?
Yes, there's been a pitching change.
Did Woodruff start?
No, Woodruff did not start.
Oh, so wait, what happened?
I think there was like one out, one on, so he must have had some sort of arm issue or something. They're showing him right now.
Yeah, Miley was the pitcher of record.
So, oh, okay, all right. Because I just looked up for the first time, and it's Woodruff on the mound with one out. There's no score.
There's nobody out.
Nobody out.
So he faced one batter, I guess. And that guy's at second base, and Miley's out, so that has to be an injury.
Yeah, let me see if I can find out what's going on.
Okay.
I'll tell you what's going on with the Giants-Falcons while Teddy looks that up. Open Falcons, -3 flat, went to -120 right away, Eric said. So this was last Sunday afternoon. Then got as high as 6, now 5.5. Eric said it's mostly due to all the things we discussed of what's going on with the Giants. Barkley is outstanding, but you know Manning has had his issues completing passes and getting protection, and Giants could be one-dimensional. But you know Teddy points out there are stats to back it up, and if the number gets high enough, you're going to, you know, you may see some sharp buyback here. Eric said it was mostly sharp money early, and all the money since then is not necessarily as sharp.
All I'm seeing is Miley is done after facing one batter, and Woodruff is on. Miley could very well turn around and start Game 6 on Friday.
You can't bring him in for one batter.
I don't know. Yeah. We don't have volume because we're listening to each other.
That's weird. Okay. Anyway, the second batter was Justin Turner. He got hit by a pitch. So the Dodgers at first and second, nobody out. We'll step away. We'll come back, and Joe Lisi will join us on the other side.
The Las Vegas Sports Line.
Hello, friends. This is Thomas Johnson from Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab. Need a great idea for lunch or dinner? Your best bet is Joe's, one of the most popular dining destinations on the Strip. Joe's provides the ideal setting for private parties with accommodations for up to 150 guests. Stop by to see us at the Forum Shops at Caesars and ask for Thomas Johnson, your maitre d'.
And make a reservation if you're going in the evening. Joe's is always packed. 702-792-9222. Follow Joe's on Twitter at Joe's Vegas. Enjoy dining at its very best. It is just a tremendous place to enjoy lunch or dinner. Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab at the Forum Shops. Teddy Covers is here. Patrick Everson's here. I'm Dave Koken. Ari Platinum on the board with us. Joe Lisi in just a moment. But first, we'll check out two things. One, we'll tell you that they're going to the second inning as the Dodgers had a first and second nobody out situation. Bottom of the first, and Manny Machado double play to end the inning. No score there. Teddy, what do we have for an angle from Ralph Michaels?
Well, Ralph Michaels gave us an angle that's as simple as it gets. This is the angle. This team's been undervalued for 2 years.
In what sport?
Football. Fresno State.
Oh,
18-3-1 against the spread. You talked about the loss at Minnesota on the interception of the year. That's one of the three spread losses that Fresno has had.
No more bargains on them, though. I mean, they're a big favorite this week in New Mexico, and they might get there anyway because they're a much better team than the Lobos. Fresno State is in the mix to be playing on January 1st. There are about five or six teams going to battle it out, and a lot of people think the Bulldogs could be the team to beat. So, Patrick, you enlisted the aid of a terrific guest, a guy who really knows his stuff, college and pro football and fantasy as well.
Joe Lisi's a good dude. You there, Joe?
I'm there, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me today.
No question. We figured we'd let you impart some wisdom on us on what you're looking at on the Week 8 college football docket.
First time I've talked with Joe since we did one of the Westgate Superbook seminars together a few years ago.
Yeah, Dave, we did it back in 2015. That was a great season, and always looking forward to talking college football with you guys.
Well, let's let you get rolling. You threw a couple of at us that you like pre-show. Michigan at Michigan State. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I know Michigan State's had a great stellar record against the Wolverines. They've actually won four of the last five by 15 points for a game. But I think Michigan's really playing well. A dominating home victory over Wisconsin. They rushed for 320 yards last week against the Badgers. I really think it comes down to their defense. They're only giving up 108 rushing yards for a game, only 129 yards through the air, and holding opposing offenses to 32% on third down conversions. For me, I think that's the difference. And when you look at the balance of Michigan State as well, still a one-dimensional offense, only rushing for 123 yards per game. I think Michigan wins this game by 14 points or more.
Yeah, Michigan State has not been able to generate much offense. Good win for them, obviously, last week at Penn State. The flip side, just to play a little devil's advocate, I'm not playing this game myself, but I'll throw this in. You can't run on Michigan State, so does Michigan have the quarterback to get it done through the air? They're going to have to beat this team with some passing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dave. I mean, they're giving up 62 rushing yards for a game. That's number one in FBS. And Michigan is averaging 217 yards on the ground per game, but on the road or on a neutral field site, they're only rushing for 116 yards on the ground. That's going to put a lot of pressure on Shea Patterson, but I think they could do it. I mean, when you look at Shea Patterson overall, 10 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, but more importantly, guys, Michigan's offense is converting 48% on third downs. I think this is why you got Shea Patterson from Ole Miss. I think they start fast. As long as they win the turnover battle, I think they'll be fine. I mean, Michigan State hasn't lost the turnover battle to Michigan since 2011, and they got 5 turnovers last year in Ann Arbor. But again, I still think Shea Patterson is the quarterback. He's gaining confidence each and every week, and I really think that Michigan dominates this road matchup in East Lansing.
Well, let me ask you this, though, because, I mean, Dave and I were talking earlier in the show, and Dave was saying that he's not someone that looks at series history a whole lot. He's not worried about what happens in past years, whereas I absolutely use that as a factor in my handicapping, how close have these programs been or not been. If you're looking at any series history in this matchup, there's no way you can lay it with the Wolverines. Michigan with a grand total of 1 win in the last 10 years by more than a touchdown. Or by a touchdown or more, I should say, against Sparty. Do you look at series history, or is that not a factor in your handicapping?
Well, a series history does play a factor, especially in rivalry games. And in rivalry games, I tend to always go with the underdog if it's over a touchdown or more. But right at a touchdown, I mean, and looking at Michigan's performances against some of the teams on their schedule, you can look at that week one performance against Notre Dame. It looks a lot better now, especially when Shea Patterson did make his first career start for the team. And it's a different offense with Shea Patterson at the helm. Playing for Ole Miss, he played with a lot of 5 wide sets, not a lot of tight end action. He got more acclimated as the seasons progressed, and more importantly, that rushing attack, 320 yards against that solid defensive front in Wisconsin. Again, you have to look at the programs as a whole. This is not the same Michigan State team that it was last year under Mark D'Antonio. They're more of a one-dimensional offense. Over the last couple of weeks, they rushed for 96 yards against Northwestern, only 123 against Penn State. They're going to need to be up around 200 to win this ballgame against Michigan, in my opinion.
Joe Lisi's with us right now. Follow him on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. This next game, you know, this is why I like to watch football, because you see games within a game and you learn stuff. I had Duke last week against Georgia Tech, and I'm not going to say I was lucky to win it, but I was lucky to win it because
3 big fumbles
on 3 plays. Georgia Tech had 3 fumbles on 3 plays. And that was the football game.
It was 3 touchdowns, right? And all 3 of them led to touchdowns.
Yeah, and we went from, you know, tight game, it's 7-7, and all of a sudden it's 28-7. So that was very enjoyable for me. But does that change how you look at this? Because it wasn't really that dominating a win like it shows on the scoreboard last week against Georgia Tech. And Duke's now facing a Virginia team that is getting better under Bronco Mendenhall.
Yeah, it's an intriguing game because obviously the letdown factor of the win over Miami. I mean, they needed that win, and they're really progressing in year number 2 under Bronco Mendenhall, especially in the offense and defensive lines. Not a lot of big names, especially with the loss of quarterback Kurt Benkert. But when you look at this matchup as a whole from a series perspective, now we talked about Michigan and Michigan State. I'm going against the trend in that matchup, or I'm going with the trend in this ballgame. Well, Virginia's won the last 3 three games over Duke by 9.6 points per game. I know Duke's the favorite in this matchup, but I think Virginia's catching a good number here at 7.5. I like the quarterback play of Bryce Perkins. He's a mobile guy. He's completing around 63% of his passes, 11 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, but he could put pressure on Duke's defense on the perimeter. They have a solid running back in Jordan Ellis, and they're a balanced offense, averaging 183 rushing yards per game, also passing for over 200. And again, they're understanding the philosophy under Bronco Mendenhall. Usually the biggest progression from a head coach usually comes from year one to year number two. And I think Virginia will be catching points the rest of the year in ACC play. I think they're a live dog on the road in Durham.
Well, let's move you along to your third game then. Last and final out of the Big Ten, Penn State and Indiana.
Yeah, I like the dog here, too. I mean, Penn State's won four of the last five over the Hoosiers by 18.2 points per game. Dominated this matchup 45-14 last year in Happy Valley. Saquon Barkley took the opening kickoff to the house, and they never looked back in that ballgame. But this is a classic spot for Penn State. I mean, they lost that battle to Michigan State last week on the last second. They now have Iowa on deck. And when you look at Penn State's mentality and emotion in this ballgame, what do they have to play for? This is a team in Indiana, guys, that's still fighting for a bowl berth. They need two more wins to become bowl eligible. They're getting solid quarterback play out of Peyton Ramsey. They're averaging 249 passing yards per game, rushing for right in the area of about 150 yards per game. But the defense for Indiana is very solid. I know they haven't stepped up in back-to-back games against Iowa and Ohio State, but they played toe-to-toe with the Buckeyes for a half. I think they could force Trace McSorley to work down the field, and more importantly, Trace McSorley is about 95% of the Penn State offense. Typically, they play better at home than they do on the road. I think Indiana's a live dog in this ballgame with 14.5.
Hey, Joe, do you look at this, and I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's kind of a similar situation to what we saw out of Auburn last week, where they suddenly had nothing to play for. And they just mailed it in a really bad performance against the Tennessee team that, you know, on paper they're supposed to handle. Do you think the same thing could happen to Penn State here? As you mentioned, they just don't have much to play for now, and this is a real challenge for Franklin to get his team mentally ready.
I agree with you 100%, Dave. I liked Tennessee last week. I took them plus 16.5. It got down to around 14.5 by game time. But I agree with you 100%. Now, Penn State could possibly get back into the mix depending upon how some games transpire this weekend. But I think there's a tendency for them to come out flat. Now, they could be looking ahead, especially to that week 9 game against Iowa. They also have to follow that up with a road game against Michigan. So I don't know how inspired they'll be against Indiana in this ballgame, and Indiana needs this game more than Penn State does to become bowl eligible, catching more than two touchdowns. Again, that's why I like the Hoosiers in this ballgame.
Joe, let people know how to I mentioned how to follow you on Twitter, but we'll let you repeat that, and also where they can get more information as to what you might be looking at each week, and talk a little fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I do a show. They can follow me on Twitter at GoForTheTwo. That's the number two. Also on my website, GoForTheTwo.com. Yeah, I talk about, you know, fantasy as well. We break down the college fantasy best plays for the week at Fantasy Sports Network. I do a three-hour show, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. In the city in Cablevision, channel 238, or they can stream it on YouTube, FNTSY. Is the station, College Football Today, every Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
Good to catch up with you, man.
Oh, love the show, guys. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
You got it, Joe Lacy. Great job. Patrick, nice job lining Joe up for us. That was a good spot. And while we're on the subject of good spots, one spot you want to check out every week is covers.com. Check it out every day, because now we've got NHL and NBA action, and all that matchup info is right there on a daily basis, and it's free, Patrick.
No question. Get to our scores and matchups pages on a daily basis. Like you said, you got a crowded schedule right now, NHL, NBA, NFL, all that going on at the same time, and we've got tons of stats, data, analysis, trends, everything you could want on our matchups and scores pages for all of these, so make sure to check us out. It's a good primer just to help you go to the window and make a more informed wager.
No score through two at Dodger Stadium, Chavez Ravine, Brewers and Dodgers. A little later on, the Red Sox and Astros go into Game 4. We'll talk about that in a Wager Talk marquee matchup next.
The Las Vegas Sports Line.
What's hot today? It's time for the Wager Talk marquee matchup of the night. WagerTalk.com. Start winning now.
No score, top of the third inning with Woodruff and Kershaw battling it out. The official starter for Milwaukee was Miley. He faced one batter. It was not an injury. They just pulled him. The Dodgers have a righty-heavy lineup today, and they decided to put Woodruff in right away. So far, so good. As we are top of the third, one out. Kershaw sharp so far for the Dodgers. Later on, Teddy, the Red Sox and Astros. And the popular side here was the Astros going into this series. They find themselves somewhat backs against the wall. This is a game that the Astros had better win, or they're very likely going to be home sooner than they'd hoped for this October. Boston with a 3-1 lead and two of the last three at home, they'd be really tough to beat.
Sure, and, you know, it's an interesting pitching matchup, being that Charlie Morton hasn't thrown since September.
That's what I wrote in my analysis. He has pitched four innings in the last 31 days.
Yeah, and exactly. It wasn't like he even had a long outing then. Whereas Porcello has been doing the, I'm pitching out of the bullpen, now I'm going to start, now I'm going to pitch out of the bullpen. That worked against the Yankees, where he came out of the bullpen and then had a very effective start. Will it work again in this series and in this spot against an Astros team that, with their backs against the wall...
Yep.
I kind of want Houston with this, but, you know, it feels like that sort of a zigzag.
Is this a game where you maybe... I didn't bet the game.
What I might do,
I want to see what Morton's command looks like early. Because, again, he hasn't pitched since September 30th. He's pitched four innings in the last month. And if he doesn't have his command, he's going to get hit. I mean, the Boston, you have to be commanding your pitches against this offense. And by the way, he's in one of his little hot streaks right now. Not that Jackie Bradley's a good hitter, but we've seen him go on these little 4 or 5 day rampages in the past. He's got 7 RBIs in the last 2 games. That lineup suddenly gets better if one of their non-hitters is hitting.
Sure, and I mean, JBJ has that potential. Oof. You know, I got a great quote here from A.J. Hinch talking about what he expects from Morton today. I know he feels the best he's felt in the last month or so, which is a good sign. I think adrenaline will go a long way. So you have to watch pitch quality. I have to be prepared for him to go 3 innings like he did in Baltimore, or if he's cruising, more than that. We know our players, so we know when fatigue is starting to set in or when he's not feeling it, or if he starts spraying the ball a little bit. I'll be pretty aggressive with the bullpen Wednesday if need be, but I don't want to doubt Charlie from the get-go and all of a sudden be looking for a problem that doesn't exist. So
right. It
sounds like Hinch will be looking for signs to pull Morton on the early side.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, he can't be going to go 75 pitches tops. I mean, he just hasn't thrown enough in the last month, Patrick. The guy's been on the sidelines. He was a little bit banged up. His velocity was down in those last couple of appearances. So I think this is 60 to 75 pitches and it's onto the bullpen.
Yeah, and this is a game I was talking about with a couple of different books earlier, just real briefly to get an update. So, and obviously closer to pitch time, you could see some shifting on this. But early on at CG Books anyway, a big bulk of the money was on the Astros. They opened minus 140, went up to minus 151. So they might need the Red Sox at the book tonight. We'll see.
All right, WagerTalk.com. We shot videos today. I shot two of them, North Carolina, Syracuse, and Minnesota, Nebraska. Did you shoot videos today, Teddy?
Yeah, I did.
What did you talk about?
We talked Monday Night Football,
uh-huh.
And I talked a little Purdue-Ohio State, and cool. There was a third one I shot as well.
Well,
I don't know. I was just arguing with everyone who I was
surprise
I was on
video.
That was fun.
Listen, those videos should be up, I don't know, probably in the next hour or two, so check them out at wagertalk.com. Hope you subscribe to the channels where they're available. Lots of people watching these videos. We think there's good information on them. Great information on the website as well, wagertalk.com. Time for our play of the day.
It's the play of the day.
All I do is win.
Our 2-0 this week. Got a hockey winner last night. And Teddy, let's see if we can keep the streak going. You got a play of the day for us?
2-0, no pressure, right? No pressure.
No, not really, because it's just, if it was 22 in a row, there'd be pressure. Two, no.
Okay, well, there's one that I like in the association for this evening. Let's take a look at Cleveland and Toronto over the total. 214.5, 215, the prevailing number. All the talk out of Toronto, well, all the talk out of Cleveland, is that they're going to run and gun. They really want to push pace. And Toronto, during the preseason, was extraordinarily offensively efficient, scoring 118-plus in four of their five. So look for the Cavs and the Raptors to have a high-scoring affair on the opening night going over the total.
Thanks to Patrick Everson, Teddy Covers, Ari Platinum, Joe Lisi. I'm Dave Kokin. Stick around. Cofield & Company is coming up next on The Sports Leader. Have a great Wednesday night.